Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Tuesday, December 4th, 2012. Will Seattle be the next to lose its liberal talk station? There's another line in the Elvis Costello song that radio's controlled by those who want to anesthetize the way that you feel. And a trend, a sad trend, that we're seeing across the country now is that commercial AM progressive talk stations are changing format. And I think we have unfortunately reached a tipping point. And this is something I've experienced firsthand. Some of you know I had a syndicated radio show that was on the station in Seattle, KPTK, along with the station in Portland that just went to a sports format a few weeks ago, KPOJ. And during the period when Air America relaunched liberal talk in this country, starting in 2004, we saw a really substantial growth, never to the level of conservative talk. At its highest point, liberal talk was about 10% of the talk formats in the country, and we've always been outnumbered and outshouted by conservative talkers who comprise about 90% of the talk programs on AM radio. And so some of this may have seemed inevitable, and we can point fingers all we want. Air America was a terrible operation. It was a bad business plan. And while Rachel Maddow's on TV and Al Franken is in the United States Senate, Air America burned a lot of the progressive donors slash investors who have stayed away from liberal talk on radio ever since. And because big companies like Clear Channel and CBS own all of the valuable AM stations across the country, we were forced into the clutches of companies that had no interest in making progressive talk successful. And it, in many ways, was a self-fulfilling prophecy, because by putting progressives on the radio but not promoting it, not advertising it, and letting people know where to find it, it really was and stayed a niche format. And in the last 2 years, there have been very few stations that changed to a progressive talk format. More stations were abandoning the genre. And I say that we've reached an uncomfortable tipping point because the entire West Coast now doesn't have dedicated progressive talk outlets. Sure, there are a few people like Norman Goldman, who's on in San Francisco in the afternoon, but he and Randy Rhodes are the only daytime liberals on that station. They put Glenn Beck on in the morning on 960 in San Francisco. And in Los Angeles, there are just a few remnants of progressive talk on the AM station there that is run by Clear Channel. So losing Seattle, Portland, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, San Diego went down several years ago, it's no longer a national format. And the company that distributes all of the progressive talk shows, called Dial Global, is in deep financial trouble. They delisted. They voluntarily took their stock off the NASDAQ exchange recently because it was performing so poorly. The other force that is in play is that the big operators like CBS and Clear Channel are moving more towards sports talk as the way to make money on the AM dial. And that's what's going to happen in Seattle. CBS has launched nationally a new sports talk format, and they're going to bump the progressives off AM 1090 KPTK in Seattle to make room for more sports blather. And their calculation is not political. And while there are people who see sinister motives here, I understand how broadcasting works and the way these people operate and the way they think. And they're thinking about the easiest route to a bottom-line profit. And sports represents that. It's much easier to sell than liberal talk. The other factor that we have to take into account, and Dial Global mentioned this in a filing when it delisted its stock. The setback that the industry has seen this year started when Rush Limbaugh attacked Sandra Fluke, the Georgetown University student who he said, was expecting us to pay for her birth control, and in exchange, Rush wanted to see her sex videos. And that slimy attack caused a boycott of the Rush Limbaugh show that unfortunately spread to the entire genre. And included progressive talk, which was seen as too controversial. Even though you've never heard Tom Hartman or Ed Schultz or Randy Rhodes or even the comedian Stephanie Miller attack right-wingers the way Rush Limbaugh attacked Sandra Fluke. And so the business outlook is very dim. And I'm going to post a link to the petition that you can add your name to let CBS know that you want to keep progressive talk in Seattle. But my strong sense is that that decision has already been made, and that with so many other cities having lost their progressive talk station already, the owners know that there'll be a firestorm, there'll be a petition, there'll be a call to boycott advertisers, and it will fizzle out in short order. So I am not happy at all in making any predictions, but I have to tell you that the signs are very bleak for the future of progressive syndicated talk radio in this country. And allow me to put in a plug for the work that I do here, because we're not making a lot of money. We take in subscriber contributions here, and it does cover my costs. But I don't get paid to host these podcasts. I don't make a living at it. I do other things to enable me to be able to donate my time to this podcast. But I encourage you, if you care about independent media and about progressive voices being available to you, I ask you to support my effort. And if you haven't subscribed already and you are able to financially, I would appreciate it if you go to peterbcollins.com, and right on the left-hand side or at the top, there's several buttons that you can push to sign up for our subscriptions. It's $1 for a 24-hour pass, $5 a month, or $50 a year. And your support means a lot to me, particularly at a time when we're seeing the commercial AM talk programs die off city by city. In Egypt, Cairo streets are filled with marchers, protesters, and now the whiff of tear gas as the Morsi government tries to maintain the power grab that Mohamed Morsi announced that puts him above even review of the courts. And as we mentioned yesterday, all of the courts in Egypt are now on strike. It appears that a general strike is developing there. And this is a very serious problem, because Egypt is a critical country, its stability is crucial, and this expansion of presidential power to dictatorial levels is quite alarming. And I'm glad there are people in the streets. I wish Americans were more willing to protest, whether it's the loss of a radio station or the loss of one of our constitutional rights. President Obama has issued a blunt warning to Syria that if you use tear gas, chemical weapons, or other biological weapons, and I misspoke there, I don't want to include tear gas, sarin gas, nerve agents, chemical weapons, are stockpiled by the Syrian government. And apparently, our intelligence indicates that they have made moves to mobilize their chemical weapons against the various rebels arrayed in this civil war. And so Obama and Secretary of State Clinton have each issued these warnings that if Syria uses chemical weapons, that there will be consequences. And, you know, I'm uncomfortable about the whole thing, because as we have covered on this program many times, we don't know the array of rebel groups who are challenging the brutal regime of Bashar al-Assad. But this appears to be another pretext for a military intervention, And frankly, the United States cannot handle another deployment, another occupation, or another hot war in the Middle East. Speaking of which, we're now getting spin from the U.S. military in Afghanistan in a grisly manner. They're reporting that the number of Afghan soldiers killed has risen dramatically and is now averaging 300 a month. And we're losing anywhere from 5 to 30 or 40 American troops per month. It does fluctuate widely. But the use of these figures is intended to signal that the U.S. is handing off the duties to the Afghan forces. And while I don't quibble with these statistics, the idea that Afghani forces are prepared to take control of the nation's security, that they can effectively confront the Taliban and other rebels, and that we're going to stand down as they stand up, it's all bullshit. The Afghan troops are illiterate, they're drug-addled, and at the first opportunity, many of them will desert. And I am sad for the loss of any life, including Afghan forces. But this is not any kind of meaningful message that the U.S. is transferring control to the Afghans. And speaking of control and transfer, while I was away, Hamid Karzai ordered Afghan forces to take control of the Bagram prison facility called Parwan. And this is after a series of warnings by the Afghan government to the United States, a two-month grace period that was agreed to between Obama and Karzai in September. And because the U.S. was dragging its feet, there are at least 57 prisoners there who have been acquitted by Afghan courts but continue to be held by the United States. And there's an unknown number of individuals held at that facility by the United States who have been captured outside of the war zone in Afghanistan. It's the new Guantanamo. And so it's a very contentious set of issues, and I'm sure that the Obama administration is pleased that they got past the election without that whole set of issues blowing up again. We appear to have lost a drone, another one, over the airspace of Iran. Now, the United States is denying this, but Iran's Revolutionary Guard naval forces have shown pictures of a captured American drone that they say entered Iranian airspace over the Persian Gulf on Monday or early Tuesday. They say it was a Scan Eagle model built by Boeing, which can be launched and operated from ships. But a Navy spokesman for the United States in Bahrain denied the Iranian claim, saying that no American drones are missing. Quote, the U.S. Navy has fully accounted for all unmanned air vehicles operating in the Middle East region. But the drone could have been from the CIA or the NSA, which both have eyes on Iran. And there are also some Gulf kingdoms that reportedly have Scan Eagle drones. Still, this is another embarrassment to the United States. Last time a drone crashed in Iran, they made a scale model of it in hot pink and delivered it to the United States. And speaking of drones, the Washington Post published a story on December 1st that starts off with an episode from this past year, April, when an inexperienced military contractor got the joystick of a drone and committed blunder after blunder in a brief 6-minute flight. The pilot of the MQ-9 Reaper drone took off without permission from the control tower. This is in the Seychelles. A minute later, he yanked the wrong lever at his console, killing the engine without realizing it. As he tried to make an emergency landing, he forgot to put the wheels down. Duh! And this $9 million aircraft belly-flopped on the runway, bounced, and plunged into the water at the airport's edge. Now, this is just the latest in a rash of U.S. military drone crashes that don't get reported much in the American media. Last January 14, A predator drone crashed off the Horn of Africa while trying to return to an airport next to the U.S. military base in Djibouti. And as Medea Benjamin reported in the book she wrote about drones, published earlier this year, there are many crashes. Five predators have crashed since the Air Force began ramping up drone operations in Djibouti. Those flights go into Yemen and Somalia. And so we hear about how precise they are, how they prevent the loss of American lives, but at $9 million and up per drone, when they crash, the costs are not measured only in dollars. I want to recommend to you two items at Robert Parry's website, consortiumnews.com. Bob himself has published a piece about an old source that was one of his vital sources when he broke the story about the October surprise. That was when Ronald Reagan's allies arranged with Iran to hold our hostages until after the election in 1980. The source is former Israeli intelligence officer Ari Ben-Menash, and he narrowly survived a possible assassination attempt on Sunday when his home in Montreal, Canada, was set on fire. It's suspected as arson. And I'll put up a link to consortiumnews.com, but I encourage you to read this powerful story about the former intelligence officer Ari Ben-Menash. And while you're there, read Ray McGovern's latest commentary about the nomination of Susan Rice. It hasn't been announced yet, but it's widely rumored that President Obama will name her to replace Hillary Clinton as Secretary of State. And beyond the Benghazi muck-up, Ray McGovern, the former CIA briefer of President Reagan, he goes into some detail as to why Susan Rice should not be the next Secretary of State, including her extreme and blind support of Israel. And there's an interesting contrast to that. The leadership of one of New York's most vibrant Jewish congregations, B'nai Jeshurun, has shocked some of its congregants by sending out an email supporting the United Nations vote last week that upgraded Palestine to a non-member observer state. It's on the Upper West Side, this congregation, and while it's considered to be a left-leaning Jewish group, some congregants thought that this email went too far. And here's what the rabbis wrote. The vote at the UN yesterday is a great moment for us as citizens of the world. This is an opportunity to celebrate the process that allows a nation to come forward and ask for recognition. Having gained independence ourselves in this way, we are especially conscious of this. Free-thinking American Jews. I think it's important to point it out because often I'm critical of AIPAC, I'm critical of the Nation of Israel, and I'm critical of the American politicians who fall into line with way too much support for some of the worst policies advanced by Israel in recent years. And when we have American Jews willing to speak out in that manner, I think you deserve to know it. Off the coast of California, a Coast Guard chief petty officer was killed when suspected drug smugglers rammed his boat. He was in a 21-foot-long inflatable that was put to sea by an 87-foot Coast Guard cutter called the Halibut off Marina del Rey, Southern California. And they chased a group of suspected smugglers for about 4 hours and finally captured them. And two Mexican nationals have been charged with killing that Coast Guard officer. And our borders, we do have a right to secure them. And I believe that, you know, we have a right to inspect whether it's a boat that may be smuggling drugs or people who are coming through border checkpoints. But the ACLU is challenging the right of border agents to search, copy, and seize the laptop computers, cameras, and phones of people passing through the border, including American citizens. And this is a very important set of issues, because I believe that with the amount of data we collect on our computers and our phones, that we have a Fourth Amendment right to privacy, and it is widely abused. And I think that we need to challenge this, and we need to assert that without probable cause and a court order, a border agent can't just willy-nilly go through your computer. And I know a gentleman who was flying into San Francisco International Airport. He had come from Asia. He was traveling alone. They inspected his computer, and he was not suspected of being a terrorist or a drug smuggler, but they found pornographic images and child porn on his computer. And I consider that to be a violation of his right to privacy. And I don't condone kiddie porn or promote it, but we have draconian laws in this country. And when those laws are based on an illegal search, then I have very serious constitutional issues. And I'm glad the ACLU is raising those matters. And speaking of our privacy, yesterday in this podcast, I mentioned that Senator Pat Leahy of Vermont has pushed through a bill to try to assert our privacy rights over our email. And now we learn that law enforcement agencies are trying to amend that bill to include an exclusion for law enforcement access to our text messages in particular. And they want to order the phone companies and internet companies to retain copies of text messages for up to 2 years. This is another example of the overreach since 9/11, and it's something that we really need to push back on. Because, as I mentioned yesterday, while I think Senator Leahy's intentions are good, we know that the FISA law permits the NSA to capture all of our electronic communications, landlines, cell phones, text messages, emails. And so a lot of this is meaningless window dressing, and it'll be interesting to see if the same Senator Leahy and others who have voted for his bill vote to expand the extend the life of the FISA reform law from 2008, which expires, goes off the fiscal cliff at the end of this month. And as I've mentioned, the only dispute appears to be how long to renew it for, not to revise it to end the unfair immunity for the telephone companies that prevents us from suing over this unconstitutional behavior, and no reining in of the excessive and abusive interception of our electronic communications. On the same note, I continue to be offended by the security theater at airports, and the leader of the TSA, John Pistole, failed to show up for a hearing on Capitol Hill last week. Now, he may have a decent reason, because he reports to the Homeland Security Committee. That's the committee that has oversight over the TSA. And it was a different committee that called him, the Aviation Subcommittee, and they wanted to give him a hard time about TSA. Now, according to Joe Sharkey in the New York Times, the agenda of the Republicans who run that committee appeared to be to force the privatization of airport security. And I'm not particularly in favor of that, because we end up with a mishmash of procedures and implementation of policies. And if we're going to have this intrusive airport security, frankly, I'd rather it be run by the government. And the modification I'd like to make is that TSA workers should be permitted to unionize. And I also have a personal gripe, because I have traveled to Maui in Hawaii now 3 years in a row. And when you go into that airport to fly back, there are always incredible long lines. And I don't know who decides how many checkpoints there are and how many TSA employees are assigned to a particular airport. But based on my anecdotal experience, that airport is chronically underserved by the TSA. And this leads to the begging of the big question. And in the New York Times blog written by Andrew Rosenthal, the editorial page editor, he talks about a speech that was given in London last week, or actually at Oxford University, by the general counsel for the Pentagon, J. Johnson. And considering who he works for, and how the presidential powers have been expanded, including the drone programs and the killer capture program. Targeted assassination is the proper term for it. Jay Johnson raised issues that are very much out of character for individuals in the Obama administration. He asked the question of how long this so-called war on terror should continue. And he deplores the idea that this is the new normal and that we have an endless war that will never be declared over. And while Johnson is part of the problem, he justifies military detention without trial or charge. He justifies the compromised position that Obama has employed at Guantanamo by keeping the prison open, by holding people there without charge, by using the military tribunals, which are clearly unfair and don't rise to the level of the American system of justice. Jay Johnson can rationalize many of those issues. But he said, we must be able to say to ourselves that our efforts should no longer be considered an armed conflict against Al-Qaeda and its associated forces, rather a counterterrorism effort against individuals who are the scattered remnants of Al-Qaeda. But Jay Johnson, while I appreciate the sentiment, and I'll offer one more quote here, in its 12th year, we must not accept the current conflict and all that it entails as the new normal. Peace must be regarded as the norm toward which the human race continually strives. Well, sir, your actions don't match those words in any way, shape, or form. And, as I pointed out many times, this bogus battle over the fiscal cliff in Washington is a distraction. Because if we really wanted to fix the current year deficit, if we really wanted to reduce our long-term debt, we would be making serious cuts to defense spending, to intelligence spending, to the TSA theater at the airports. And we're doing none of that. And so while Jay Johnson may have had a warm and fuzzy 1,000 points of light moment at Oxford University, the policies that he supports and defends on a daily basis don't match that in any way. Hey, thanks for listening. Why don't you send me an email? I'd like to hear your reaction.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.